Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. 12 Years a Slave is Solomon Northup's autobiographical slave narrative, first published in 1853 after his rescue from bondage in Louisiana. Northup had been born free in New York, lived with his wife and children, and worked as a laborer and violinist before being deceived, kidnapped in Washington, D.C., and sold under a false identity into slavery. The book recounts the 12 years he spent under multiple enslavers, especially on plantations in the Red River region, while concealing his free status, because disclosure could bring punishment or death. Its purpose is both personal and political to record the facts of Northup's ordeal and to expose slavery through eyewitness testimony rather than fiction or distant observation. The narrative combines memoir, legal evidence, social description, and abolitionist argument. Its power comes from the contrast between Northup's prior freedom and his forced reduction to property, making the fragility of Black freedom in antebellum America painfully concrete. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, kidnapping shows the legal vulnerability of free Black Americans. The opening movement of 12 Years a Slave is crucial because Northup is not born into slavery. He is born free, legally recognized as such, and embedded in family and community life in New York. His abduction in Washington, D.C., after accepting work from men who deceive him, demonstrates that freedom for Black Americans in the antebellum United States could be precarious even when formally protected by law. Once drugged, beaten, and renamed, he is moved into a slave trading system where his own testimony about his identity is treated as worthless. This creates one of the book's central arguments: slavery did not only oppress those already enslaved, but also distorted law, commerce, and public trust across regions. Northup's case exposes how documents, race, violence, and economic incentive interacted. B. A free person could be transformed into saleable property because traders and buyers benefited from disbelief. The memoir, therefore, challenges any narrow view of slavery as a confined Southern institution. The XANE, it shows a national chain of complicity, from urban kidnapping to plantation labor, held together by profit and racialized denial. Secondly, plantation labor is presented as a system of surveillance, exhaustion, and fear. Northup's account of plantation life is detailed not only because he wants readers to feel horror, but because he wants them to understand slavery as an organized labor regime. He describes cotton and sugar cultivation, daily quotas, overseers, punishments, food, shelter, and the relentless measurement of productivity. These descriptions matter because they show that brutality was not accidental or exceptional. It was built into the economic structure. Enslaved people were forced to work under constant surveillance, and the threat of whipping shaped every decision, including pace, speech, posture, and silence. Northup also records how fatigue and fear narrowed the possibilities of resistance. Escape was not simply a matter of courage, since geography, patrols, dogs, illiteracy enforced by law, and the danger of betrayal made movement extremely difficult. His perspective as a formerly free and literate man gives the account unusual analytical force. He can compare free labor with coerced labor and show that plantation productivity depended on violence, deprivation, and the systematic destruction of personal autonomy. Thirdly, identity survives through memory, literacy, music, and restrained self-control. A major tension in the memoir is Northup's effort to preserve a sense of self while the slave system attempts to erase it. After being assigned a new name and forbidden to reveal his origin, he must live outwardly as another person while inwardly holding on to his past. Memory becomes a form of survival. He recalls his family, his free life, and the facts needed to prove who he is if contact with the North ever becomes possible. Literacy is equally important, not as a simple escape tool, but as a marker of identity and a potential route back to legal recognition. Because writing letters is dangerous and often impossible, knowledge must be guarded carefully. Music also has a complex role. Northup's skill as a violinist sometimes gives him limited mobility or temporary favor, yet it does not free him from bondage. The book avoids sentimentalizing talent or intelligence as protection. Instead, it shows that maintaining humanity under slavery required discipline, secrecy, emotional restraint, and the preservation of inner truth when public identity had been violently falsified. Fourthly, the narrative portrays enslaved people as morally distinct individuals, not symbols. One reason 12 Years a Slave remains significant is its attention to the individuality of enslaved people around Northup. The memoir does not treat them only as background evidence of suffering. Figures such as Patsy and Eliza appear through specific circumstances, attachments, vulnerabilities, and forms of endurance. Eliza's pain after separation from her children reveals how the slave market attacked family bonds, while Patsy's suffering under Edwin Epps and his household exposes the overlapping violence of labor exploitation, sexual vulnerability, jealousy, and punishment. Northup descriptions are often restrained, but the restraint intensifies the moral force because he presents scenes as observed facts rather than melodrama. At the same time, the book distinguishes among enslavers, noting differences in temperament and conduct without excusing the institution itself. Even comparatively less cruel owners remain participants in a system that denies human ownership of self. This moral precision is important. Northup does not argue that slavery is evil only when practiced by sadists. He shows that the institution itself makes domination normal and makes ordinary human sympathy unstable, conditional, and insufficient. Lastly, rescue depends on testimony, allies, and the fragile reach of law. Northup's return to freedom is not presented as a simple triumph of justice. It depends on a rare convergence of memory, communication, sympathetic assistance, and legal intervention. The Canadian carpenter, Samuel Bass, plays a pivotal role by helping Northup send word to trusted contacts in the North. But even this act carries risk because aiding an enslaved man could provoke retaliation. Henry B. Northup and others then use legal channels to establish identity and secure release. This sequence demonstrates that law could sometimes correct an injustice, yet only when evidence, allies, jurisdiction, and persistence aligned. The same legal culture that finally recognized Northup's freedom had failed to protect him for 12 years and did not successfully punish the original kidnappers. This unresolved tension gives the ending its complexity. The memoir affirms the value of testimony and legal action, while exposing the limits of both under a racial order designed to favor enslavers. Northup's liberation is therefore deeply personal, but it also functions as an indictment of a society where freedom required extraordinary proof and assistance. In conclusion, 12 Years a Slave should be read by students of American history, readers of African American literature, and anyone seeking a primary account of slavery that combines personal experience with social documentation. Its practical benefit is educational. It clarifies how kidnapping, slave trading, plantation discipline, family separation, racial law, and economic coercion work together in daily life. Its intellectual benefit is equally important, because Northup writes from the rare position of someone who had lived as a free citizen before being forced into slavery. That contrast allows readers to see enslavement not as an inherited condition alone, but as an imposed legal and commercial transformation of a person into property. Compared with many slave narratives, the book stands out for its detailed attention to plantation processes, its careful naming of places and people, and its controlled factual tone. It is emotionally powerful, but it does not rely primarily on rhetorical flourish. It builds its case through accumulated observation. The memoir also remains distinct because its publication soon after Northup's rescue made it both a personal testimony and an abolitionist document. Modern readers benefit from reading it not only as a survival story, but as evidence of how institutions can normalize injustice while requiring victims to prove their own humanity. If you would like to support Solomon Northup, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.